Imagine a place where you are never far from your next adventure. Welcome to Prince Edward Island, Canada, a destination where the breathtaking views rejuvenate the soul. Discover 700 miles of coastline with white sand beaches and red cliffs, the freshest flavors from land and sea, world-class golf, outdoor adventures, and authentic cultural experiences. Come find your island, Prince Edward Island, the official travel destination of the NHL and a proud partner of the Boston Bruins. Learn more at explorepei.com.
The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Here's Krejci. He'll weave his way out to center ice, watched by Ryan Strom, hands it to Pastrnak, high slot. Cuts around to check into the right circle. Centers, Krejci shoots, he scores! The black and gold jerseys cascade off the bench to celebrate David Krejci's overtime winner. The Bruins rally from 2-2 to win it on Black Friday. 3-2 over the Rangers.
Welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. Couple of hours of hockey talk with you up until 11 o'clock. Joining us here in the Town Fair Tire Studios, Judd Surratt and Bob Beers, who called that action yesterday as the Bruins beat the Rangers in overtime 3-2 to claim their sixth consecutive win to close out the month of November with right now the best overall record in the league. Morning, guys.
Morning. Morning.
Fun times. Just doesn't stop with this team. We talked about it after the game yesterday. It's just, you know, you got Patrice Bergeron's been out this week, and you know you've dealt with some adversity with this team as far as injuries early on in this season, and yet they keep finding new combinations. They keep finding new ways to win these games, and whether they get ahead early or they fall behind early, it's, you know, the end result turns out to be the same most nights.
Yeah, they've been finding ways. That's the best way to put it, because they're still searching for the 60-minute game. I mean, I think every team would love that, but their goaltending is very, very good, and we saw that on display. Even in Montreal, we saw that on display. We certainly saw it in Ottawa, saw it at times last night in the first period, early on with Halak. I mean, so it's allowed them to kind of find their game, really. I mean, it's hard to explain right now because they haven't been at their best. They don't, certainly at times in games, they turn it up and are able to win, but, you know, there's times in games where, I mean, they had 10 shots against Ottawa through the first two periods. Mm. And that was indicative of the way the game had gone. And then all of a sudden they win a game, you know, they find it in the third period and finish it off. So, you know, they're hardly at their best, but they find ways to win, and it's a testament to them. I mean, it's a long season. They went through a long season last year. They've expected at some point to, you know, to dip a little bit. Is this it? I don't know. I mean, if it is, great. Because even when they lose games, they lose them in overtime or a shootout. You know, they've got 3 regulation losses in the first 26 games. That's hard to explain. I mean, there's nobody even close to that.
And they haven't been beaten.
I mean, Washington is 4. Yeah. I shouldn't say that. Washington is 4, but and they're the top 2 teams in the NHL in terms of points.
10-0-4 at home through the first 2 months of the season. Pretty darn good. But in the big picture, just looking at what we saw here through the week, and then the Bruins are going to finish it off tomorrow against the Montreal Canadiens. So you're without Bergeron for all 3 games. As Bob detailed, the starts in Montreal and Ottawa, they weren't very good. Mm. Yesterday, maybe the first 7 or 8 minutes, the Bruins came out with a little bit of jump, and then I think they had 1 shot in the last 10 minutes. And then it was the penalty killers and Yaroslav Halak that allowed the Bruins to rally, and it was interesting.
PK was great yesterday. I mean, I know the first goal they weren't too happy about, but in second and third period, 5-on-3, third period, 4-minute high sticky.
Oh, there was a lot to unpack yesterday.
Yeah. There was a lot going on in that game yesterday. Yeah, that was a tough call against Lindholm. But so 4 minutes there, they had to kill in the third period. Penalty killing got the job done.
Henrik Lundqvist felt like after the Bruins killed off the 62-second 5-on-3 that the Rangers had, later in that second period, that's when you could start to see the life come. It came. There was a scrap there with Charlie McAvoy. It was the penalty kill.
Yep.
And then it all started to build with this team. And then if you think about it, they really basically fashioned a lot of that comeback without Brad Marchand on the ice because he was sent off from the concussion spotter, which I wish in a perfect world we would have gotten some sort of a comment from the National Hockey League why it transpired the way it did. Obviously, Marchand went off. Then he came out on social media and apologized for his comments. I just wish that the National Hockey League would have said something, why we saw what we saw. But maybe the National Hockey League has been issuing too many of these here lately.
Well, that I mean, clearly, you said you wish we would have gotten it. I feel like Brad Marchand wishes he would have gotten a bit of an explanation, too.
He might get it. He might get it, you know, today or whatever. But it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, right? The fact that he got hit in he ran into or he got hit in the late in the second period, and then they asked him to leave in the third period. I mean, when I saw him come off the bench, break his stick, and, you know, storm down the hallway, I wasn't entirely sure what had happened because I didn't see anything in the third period that would indicate him having to go down to the locker room. I said, well, maybe it's an equipment issue, maybe he's hurt, and, you know, I didn't know. Then you see the replay of him, but it was the second period.
That happened
a while ago.
I got really confused because I was driving in here during a good chunk of the second period, and I got here around the start of the third, and I saw Marchand go off the ice, and I thought, well, something must have just happened to him, and they showed the replay, and I said, okay, well, I kind of understood it, but I didn't know the timeline of the whole thing until after the fact, and when I went back and saw the replay and he kind of runs into the elbow, he was kind of blinking his eyes and shaking his head. And I thought, okay, well, I could see what they saw, but I have no idea why it would have taken through an entire intermission before they would have made that decision. And that's what I think he got frustrated about, too.
Well, yeah, it's 2-1. It's the third period. We're already past the injury.
Yeah. Well,
now
you could spend.
Now he's got to go get tested.
Well, you could have tested him during the entire intermission,
exactly.
Right?
He had 18 minutes to do it.
Yeah. And he could have been back to start the third. So, he, as you said, Judd, he did, you know, last night on social media come out and you know, a little more level-headed, issue an apology. But he was steaming in the locker room yesterday.
All the quotes coming out of the room were spectacular. Mark Capello was just giggling coming up from the elevator. I got it all!
Something that the NHL definitely needs
The high stick is another one.
Yeah,
Judd, I mean, we sat there and looked at the rule book after the game. There was no penalty on the ice. There was no penalty called.
Mm-hmm.
Even they got together, there was still no announcement that there's a penalty. That's not right. Right?
Yeah.
You have to call a penalty, and then you can review it. It has to be a double minor penalty that you call, not... It blows my mind. It can't be just a minor. You can't review a minor.
Right.
You can review a double minor. But they didn't call a
penalty. But you can't review a no call and turn it into a penalty either, right?
Minor.
That's not the way that's supposed to work.
So Bruce Cassidy said immediately after the game that there was no call issued. There was no time on the board.
Neither referee had an arm up.
Yep.
Now, I know a little bit later, Billy Jaffe, when he comes on, I think he'll be able to give a little bit more of a clarification on what the officials called, but the way it transpired, the way it went down, sort of analogous to what we're talking about with the concussion spotter, I'm wondering if this could have been done a little bit better. But to Bob's point about the rule book and the way it's written, I think that that's a loophole that has to be changed.
First of all, how silly is it that you can't – so they put the rule in because last year there was – a high sticking call made, might have been in the playoffs, I don't know, but it was a high sticking call made, and they're showing it on the Jumbotron. It was the guy's own teammate that hit him.
Right. There was like a 5-minute major in the playoffs. They scored 3 goals. It was like the Vegas San Jose series
that was a different penalty. Yeah,
that was the major
penalty. And they put rules in for that.
Well, that's why I thought that was okay.
But there was a high stick, and like I said, I don't know, or at least one high stick where his own teammate caught him, but they called a penalty.
Right.
And then they're showing it on Jumbotron and the coaches are going nuts, and So they put this rule in where, okay, you can review a high stick, but the way we looked at it last night, it has to be, you can't review a 2-minute high stick. It has to be a 4-minute high stick. It's just silly. It's just stupid. If we're reading the rule right, and I think we are, we read it back a couple of times. It has to be a double minor for you to review it. Last night or yesterday afternoon, there was no penalty at all.
Right.
See, these are one of those situations.
It's just more fun with review, right?
And then it went to a 4-minute.
Yeah, he stuck with that.
Yeah.
I think Chris Rooney is going to claim that they called a double minor straight away.
Well, yeah, after the referees got together and called it, but they didn't. There was no announcement that we have a double minor penalty called after you know, talking with the linesman. We have a double minor penalty called. We are now going to review it to see if it's warranted. Okay? Just tell us that.
Sure.
But there was no penalty at the time.
And then also notice that, you know, the guy had his stick lifted at the same
exactly.
Right. You know, it's like even after they looked at the review, it shouldn't have been a 4-minute double minor.
No. The whole point of this is, okay, the league consistently, Stephen Walkham, the National Hockey League says, we want to be able to make the best call available. Well, you've got to do a better job of trying to get there. And it just, you know, examine. I think with high sticks in particular, and a play like this, I think that you have to be able to allow a better mechanism to be able to get the call right.
All right, we'll leave that there. There's a lot more fun things to talk about this morning. Bruins on a 6-game winning streak. We will talk more about that. We've got some new contracts handed out this week as well. Charlie Coyle and Chris Wagner going to be around here for the long term. We'll get to those coming up and the ramifications of those. 617-779-0985. We'll get to your calls coming up as well as we get started here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Miss something?
This is a black and gold freight train.
Catch the Hockey Show podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com and the Sports Hub app.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning, 617-779-0985. We've got Scott in Weymouth up first this morning. I know Maria's on vacation this weekend, so Scott, you're up first here on the Hockey Show.
What's up, guys? Good morning. Just waking up and put you guys on. I love the Bruins, my favorite team, my favorite sport. Just a couple quick comments. You said, or Bob Beard said, you know, it's unexplainable. It is explainable. And what it is this team has chemistry. It's a kind of an intangible, but it's palpable. They all like each other. They stick up for each other. I see them going deep in the playoffs. Coyle, what a great contract. I love it. He's a good kid. He grew up only a mile or two from me. Great kid. Great kid. Great family. Marchand needs to focus on playing hockey. He should forget the BS. He should focus. He should copy how Coyle plays. Very tough, but very clean. No BS, no slew foot, no sparing. Play good, play tough, play hard, but play clean. Nice. And this Bruins team is going to make a deep run. I'm telling you right now.
I appreciate the call, Scott. I mean, Marchie's been on, you know, decent behavior. I hasn't had any.
I got no issue with him right now. I think
on ice incidents.
I think he's got to be one of the favorites for MVP.
I think he has gone that direction.
Yeah,
he can have a little BS. I don't mind a little bit, but you know, just not crossing the line. That's hard sometimes. I get it, but I mean, what he's done this year, he's got 43 points in 26 games. He's plus 20. I mean, I think he's played hockey this year.
Yeah,
I think he's played hard. Yeah, I mean, this his past is his past, and you know it's always going to follow him around. But I think he's tried to do the right thing this season.
Look, it's, I mean, as long
last
as
year
he
in the playoffs as well.
As long as he doesn't have, like, you know, one of those momentary lapses where, you know, he does something that's going to get him suspended or anything like that. I, you know what? He needs to play the way he plays. Like,
exactly.
That's always been, you know, kind of his thing is people say, well, you know, we need him to stay away from that. I need him to mix things up a little bit. That's part of the reason he's an effective player in the league. Now, he, in addition to that, his skill level has continued to improve as his career has gone on. I mean, he's, you know, he's not scoring the kind of numbers that you just mentioned, Bob, because he's, you know, because he's playing like a rat, but it helps, right? It definitely helps when the other team is focused on him, and it helps. Don't think it doesn't help the rest of his line either.
No question. No question. I mean, I got no problem with him at all. I keep doing it. Keep doing what you're doing right now because it's working.
The other thing that the caller brought up was Charlie Coyle signing an extension. Yeah. The two extensions that happened this week that got announced just before Thanksgiving with Coyle and Wagner. And you like those on so many different levels. For the type of deals that they signed at the numbers that they signed them with, just think, Charlie Coyle could have gone out in the open market and gotten a Kevin Hayes contract, 7 years, $50 million. Mm-hmm. But the Bruins get him at a number that
similar
allows
numbers.
Them. Well, it's, what is it?
No, I mean, points-wise.
Exactly.
Like that.
Yeah. You know, and the Bruins get him for less. I understand it's one less year, but it allows them to do other things on their roster. You get Chris Wagner at a terrific number. But I think the two things that come to mind are the versatility of these guys. They can move up and down your lineup. They can play center and wing. You know, we've certainly seen that with a guy in Wagner and with Charlie Coyle. And to his first point about the way this team gets along, you know, I think that this just lengthens your core and deepens what it means to be a Bruin and what you want from your team. You know, the way that Wagner plays and the way that Charlie Coyle plays. So that's a good extension of what you have in the room and what you want to have on your roster.
You also have to have an eye towards the future. You know, you've got some contracts coming up in the near future after next season with guys that – with David Krejci, for example.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, going to be – how old is he going to be, Judd? 35, I believe,
he'll
at the time?
He'll be turning 35
my
at the end of
my keyword would work, I would tell you.
Oh, yeah. I'll look it up.
But no, he's 34 at this April. So
you know, you have to have an eye towards that. And then, you know, the pipeline coming in, and then you have to have the younger guys to replace. But, you know, all right, Coyle slots up a little bit, younger guy slots underneath him. Now he's not a third line center anymore. Now he's a second line center. It's just, whatever the scenario is, you have to have an eye towards that and what's going to replace him. Coyle's very young. His character is off the charts, I think, you know, from what we've seen and heard and everything else. And, you know, Wagner's the same way. Mm-hmm. I think that went a long way into the signing. The versatility, the character, you know, what they bring to the table. You can debate numbers all you want. What's a $7 million player look like these days? It looks like Kevin Hayes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it looks like Clayton Keller. You know, who scored 14 goals last year. And maybe he's going to be a great player in Arizona. I don't know. But he scored 14 goals last year and had 40-something points. And he got $7 million. So, you know, you focus on, oh, Coyle's a third-line center. How can he get $5 million? Well, he's a third-line center sometimes. But sometimes he's a second-line center. Sometimes he's a second-line right wing who's on your power play, who kills penalties. You know, and he's going to be probably moved up as in the next couple of years. He's going to be elevated in what he does. So go around the league, and there's a lot of, that guy makes $6
million? Oh, yeah.
That guy makes $7 million? I don't know what a $5 million player is anymore.
Well,
and the Bruins, you know, for the Bruins, it's Coyle.
Well, right now, I mean, you've got Coyle on, I mean, at $3.2 million, I think everybody would agree that is a super bargain for what he brings to this team.
Was last year in the playoffs, that's for sure.
Absolutely. You know,
there's a few more bargains on that roster.
oh yeah, there's plenty of them. And you know what, when I saw that contract the other day, my first thought was Donnie did it again, right? They consistently, when these contracts have come up, whether it's Pasternak, Marchand, I mean, go down the list, these guys have taken less than they can get on the open market They want, it's clear that they want to be here, that they like what they're, you know, what they've built here, and they want to be a part of it, and they're willing to sacrifice. And up and down the roster, almost every guy on this team that has gotten to their next contract has given a little something back to try and keep this group together.
Moreover, it's about the timing. And I know that, that Don Sweeney was upset with himself that, that McAvoy and Carlo missed, what, a couple of days of camp? Mm-hmm. He didn't get him in right on time, but he still gets him in camp, so they're ready to go. You don't have a situation like William Nylander. You don't have a situation hang over your head like Mitch Marner north of the border. Just think of the contracts that Toronto has signed and the Bruins have signed here in the last, 18 months. Compare those two and the impact that it has not only right now, but going forward on what your roster is going to look like. The Leafs cannot afford a backup goaltender, and they are losing every single game that a backup goaltender has
played. They
haven't
won a game this year with their backup.
Yeah.
They lost again yesterday. And they played them on the front end of the back-and-back.
Right.
Because they'd only played the backup goaltenders on the back end of back-to-backs. It's the only time that they played them. So yesterday was the front end of a back-to-back against the Buffalo Sabres. They play them again tonight. And they used Hutchinson.
And they lost that one, too. You mentioned, you know, kind of looking with an eye toward the future here as well. I mean, that was something that, you know, I talked about yesterday was, you know, the potential of David Krejci's future. 1 year left after this year at, you know, the highest number on the team as it stands right now. We don't know what the, you know, what the contracts are going to look like when they come up. Torrey Krug, you know, the future of that deal, you know, and I think one of the benefits to getting Wagner done, to getting Coyle done especially, is you start to get a little bit more cost certainty involved there and say, okay, you know, if you're going to be working on a deal with Krug as the season goes on, which hopefully they, you know, they're having those discussions, you need to know how much are we really going to be able to extend ourselves to try and keep this guy here. Well, if you now know that Charlie Coyle's here long-term at 5.25, as opposed to 6, 7, you know, that it might have taken to keep him here otherwise, well, now at least you know, okay, we have a better idea of what that window is going to look like. You still have DeBrusk, you still have Grizzlick, you still have, you know, Chara's not going to get a big bump at this point in his career next year, but you've got some guys out there that are going to need raises after this year, so you need to know exactly how much money you've got available if you're going to be having serious conversations with Krug during the course of the season.
Certainly, and the theme has been from a lot of these guys, whether it's been term or on money, to give the Bruins an opportunity to keep everybody in-house. I think that the players, and obviously management, knows they have a very good group together. So how do we keep this group together and at the same time allow ourselves the flexibility to add what we need?
Black and gold freight train. Freight train. Freight train.
All things Bruins and the NHL. It's the Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show coming up in about 10-15 minutes. We'll give you a chance to win pair of tickets to see the Bruins and the Hurricanes coming up on Tuesday night at the Garden. So be listening for that. 617-779-0985 if you'd like to join us here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. It's, during the break, Bob Beers pulled up some of the comparable contracts to what Charlie Coyle signed this week and started rolling off some of the names. And I think he was pretty unanimous in the studio. Charlie Coyle's more desirable player than most of the guys on that list. I mean, you ran off a number of names. There weren't too many guys on that list that anybody said, you know, I might take him.
And that's, you know, that's this year, yeah. You know, what guys are making. There was one or two that we said, you know, Zibanejad from New York. But what he's making this year is 5.3. He's an unrestricted free agent at this year.
Right, he's going to make a lot more than that. You know? Yeah, that's pretty good deal
now. So we're talking about what guys are making right now. And, you know, there's some names on the list that you know. So when people say, well, $5 million is different than what it was 10 years ago. You got to bring yourself up to what today's current numbers are. And I think for what he brings to the table, it's actually, I got no problem with it.
Well, I think as you,
27 years old.
As you pointed out, I think there are people who will take that and go, you can't pay $5 million for a third line.
Yeah, no, I get it. If that's what you want to typecast it as, but he's more than that. Right? I mean, I think we all agree on that. And I think in the future, he's going to be more than that. Counted on more than that. So, yeah, but there's so many other things you take into account. First of all, and the type of person he is. So, you're going to get a 6-year deal and say, got my money. Because there's a lot of guys like that. I got my 6-year deal, got my money. I can
put it on cruise control.
Yeah. Sounds like a goalie in Florida.
And there's other guys, because you know their character, that are going to, it's not going to affect them. And I think, I think that falls into that category. Charlie Coyle falls into that category.
Well, when you talk about the future and to sort of, I guess, combine that with what Charlie Coyle is all about. So Bruce Cassidy had Jack Studnicka in the lineup a couple of times. He put Coyle on the right side to make it a little bit easier for Jack. He can always flip-flop it if he needed to.
It against Ottawa because it wasn't working. Gaunce was in the lineup, but it wasn't because of that line wasn't working. It was what Ottawa was doing against Pastrnak, and so he had to change some lines around there.
And Jack Studnicka, maybe with a little bit more rest. Remember, he comes up to Montreal after playing a 3-3 in Providence. Mm-hmm. Then he plays the game in Montreal, picks up his first career NHL assist, won a ton of faceoffs, and was solid. Obviously there were some shifts that he felt he could have done better on. But I think, you saw a little spark from him in yesterday's game at TD Garden. Had the legs going yesterday, had a great tip that Henrik Lundqvist had to stick out the right leg and make a save on. So you saw a little glimmer from him here in a very short sample size.
Yeah, we have talked a lot about that this year as these guys have come up and they get a look. And the question is, can you sustain that? But it's good to see, because that's one of those guys you people kind of question. It's like, well, when are we going to get a chance to see this guy? When's he going to get the opportunity at the NHL level? So it's nice when he does come up to see a little flash here and there and say, okay, maybe they've got something. Maybe this is a guy that can develop into something in the NHL.
And the coaching staff has talked about it. He's got plenty of courage. And what Jack has talked about was, all right, he's listed at 6'1", 171. So how am I effective playing against bigger players? How do I navigate where I need to go and make the plays I need to make against guys who are bigger than me? And that's what he's learning this year while he's in the American Hockey League.
And that's not, that's something that, again, we've talked about players with in the past. Guys who, it's one thing to be able to do it for a game or two, but to be able to do that night in, night out, taking the pounding that you take, dealing with guys who are bigger than you, dealing with guys who are stronger than you, it takes a while to sometimes grow into that kind of player.
And in an honest assessment, the game in Montreal, he got knocked off the puck a lot. Mm-hmm. And, maybe it was fatigue, maybe it was whatever, first game. Just first impressions, all right? I'm glad he got the assists. It was great for him. It was a great moment, But he found out, okay, guys are closing on me pretty quick here, and guys are a little stronger here, And I thought yesterday afternoon, much better, much better. So I was didn't take too much out of the first game for a number of reasons, but you want to see what the player looks like over a little bit of time, and I thought yesterday, he was pretty good. I thought he was good.
Let's go to Paul in Nashua. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. Love the show.
Sure.
I'm enjoying the talk about keeping this core group together. I couldn't agree more. But it got me thinking about some of the talk I heard on the station last week, and I forget exactly which show it was, but there was an opinion that trying too hard to keep this core together is trying to keep a core of losers together after they went down in Game 7 last year. And it's my opinion. I mean, those guys worked hard to get there and had a heck of a run. And my opinion is that this is the year for these guys. If it wasn't last year, it's this year. I just have that feeling. Just looking for you guys' further opinion on that. I'll hang up. Thanks.
All right, appreciate it, Paul. I mean, look, I'm not going to defend anything that other shows say, but I would say that the start to this season, and I was talking about this a little bit earlier this morning before you guys got here, the start to this season that they have had over the first 2 months has been fascinating for exactly that. There are some teams who would kind of play the, oh, woe is me, we got close. They, you know, maybe wouldn't have their heart into it at the beginning of the season. There's been no signs of that at all with this group. The character of this team, you can't question. And when you've got that, I think you do everything in your power to try and keep that together. Because this group, you know, has proven that they can make a run. This group has proven that they're good enough to compete with anybody in the league.
Yes, but at the same time, you don't how do I put it? The Patriots, right? They don't fall in love with their players. When it's time to move on, you got to move on. So there is that degree as well. You know, at what point do you say, all right, you know, we've got to kind of – he's been just tremendous for us. He's been great for us, but, okay, we've got to move on. And I do understand that part of it. But it's not like you're – like the narrative of the rewarding losers. Well, 30 teams around the league have to pay their players.
It's only one group of winners every year.
So I don't quite get that narrative. You know what I mean? I mean, Tampa Bay Lightning, they lost in the first round last year. Well, they gave Andrei Vasilevskiy a boatload of money. Are they rewarding a loser? Right? Has Tampa won the cup?
Has
the core group in Tampa won the cup? But they're giving out money, so are they rewarding losers? No, they gave Braden Point a boatload of money. Like, that's just that holds no water. It's a dumb argument.
You traded for Charlie Coyle. He didn't win you a cup single handedly, so you know you don't give him a contract. Look, he makes your team better.
So do you get rid of everybody?
Right. You just keep turning the roster until you win one, right? I mean, this group, the mentality has, you know, in this city has kind of become championship or bust because of all the success. There's a tremendous value as a fan in having a team that you know has a shot every single year, right? You show up on opening day in a lot of markets, you know, there's no realistic chance that you're going to win a championship this year. You can't say that about the Bruins. You can't say that about any team in this market. But you can't say that about this Bruins core. This group will always have you in the conversation. And that's why you keep them together.
Well, when I look across the sports, whether it's the NHL, Major League Baseball, NBA, or the National Football League, I'll ask everybody, you know, what's the hardest championship to win? So when it comes to the Bruins, they win the cup in 2011, go to the final in 13. I understand they lost. Went to the final last year. I understand they lost. So this core has taken you and given you an opportunity to win a total of 3 championships. They pulled it off once in 2011. But I guess fast forward, because, you know, Bob was talking about the future. What is your core going to be like going forward? Because that's what every general manager and every team is trying to put together. They've got to put, what are our core pieces together and how do we surround this group in order to win championships? Because a few years down the road, Chara, Bergeron, Krejci, what are their futures hold? Are they going to be here? And if not, who are going to be the guys that carry on the mantle for this team? And you can start to see these pieces in place or getting signed right now. Marchand, Pasternak, McAvoy, So now, I think you could probably add Charlie Coyle to that mix, signing a 6-year extension. So that's what every team is looking at this point. What is our core going to be? How are we going to replace some core pieces or help and supplement our core here down the stretch to give ourselves a chance?
Shoots and rims, flashed off the glove, take it away.
It's the Hockey Show.
Centered fire, they score!
On 98.5, the Sports Hub, and streaming on the Sports Hub app.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. We'll get back to your calls here in just a second. But first, time for you to have a chance to win some tickets to see the Bruins take on Carolina. Right now, caller number 10 to the Pride Motor Group contest line, 617-931-0985. We'll score a pair of tickets to see the Bruins and Carolina this Tuesday at the Garden. Support Giving Tuesday by purchasing a 50-50 raffle ticket to benefit the Boston Bruins Foundation as well. Get your tickets now through the end of the second intermission at tonight's Bruins game and at bostonbruins.com/50-50. And we're going to have Bob Sweeney on from the Bruins Foundation coming
tomorrow's
up in a few
game.
Minutes.
As I
well.
Hope you mean.
And Tuesday's game. And
I think you said tonight's game. So.
That's what it says on here.
I know,
tickets are,
no
the,
game tonight.
The tickets are for Tuesday's game. There is also a raffle for tomorrow night's game. Yes, okay. Gotcha. Anyway, 617-931-0985. Caller 10 will go to the game on Tuesday night and always take part in those Bruins 50-50 raffles. They are raising money for good causes and they're doing really well at that. We'll talk to Swoop about that in a few minutes. Grab some calls here. The call screener is been a little iffy this morning. Mike is in Tampa this morning. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. Do you think Krug's upset that they gave these guys the money and not him? And, you know, how does signing these two guys affect getting him locked up in the future?
Okay, so this kind of goes, we talked about this, you know, kind of in relation to the long term and the future of Krejci, who's up after next year and all of that. But that's, you know, a question that has come up is, look, Torrey Krug is the big contract on the horizon here. If they're going to keep him around, did you guys read anything into these contracts getting done when they did? Do you think that, you know, Krug may end up pricing himself out here? I mean, is there any correlation between these two?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think that these two have anything to do with Torrey. But I mean, I don't know. It depends on what? It depends on term and money. I mean, that's it, as most contracts do. And, you know, if they're not comfortable with the term and the amount, then it's going to be a sticking point, and, you know, they're going to move forward with it. I mean, move forward without him. I'm saying after this year.
Sure.
You know, I don't think he's going anywhere this year. I hope not, but I get the dilemma, but I don't think he's upset that these two guys, I mean, you know, Wagner signed for $1.3 million. I don't think that has any effect on Torrey Krug.
No, that one definitely doesn't.
I don't think so either.
I haven't seen any correlation. I haven't heard anything from him. I haven't seen it reflected on the ice. You know, he had a terrific overtime goal against the Minnesota Wild the other night. he's off to a good start. 3 goals, 18 points. He's been terrific as a quarterback on the power play. So I don't know if one relates to the other necessarily.
I mean, it works both ways with some guys, right? I mean, there's some guys you get into a contract year and you see them elevate and they're looking to cash in as much as possible.
Yeah.
Other guys, you know, they struggle with it, right? And it becomes kind of, you know, something that's in their head for a good chunk of the year. And, you know, for Krug, it hasn't seemed to bother him at all. I mean, his game has been exactly what you'd expect.
True. I mean, it's – so he's the only one that can explain it, or Don Sweeney, you know, that, you know, they're the ones negotiating it, or his agent, you know, so – I mean, I can't get myself into his head and what he's thinking right now. He hasn't commented on it much lately, and, you know, hopefully, I wouldn't want to be asked about it every day. You know, so he's going to get his money somewhere. I don't know if it's going to be here or not. I hope so, but at the right number.
Every situation is different. You know, when you talk about guys in a contract situation, does it impact their play? I think of Ivan Provorov last year, and they're different players because, you know, Krug is much more mature. He's been through it a lot more often. But Ivan Provorov, he struggled last year in part because he was wondering, okay, what am I going to get paid? I'm a restricted free agent. There's going to be a big payday ahead. What exactly is it going to be? And his play suffered on the back end last year for the Flyers. As a result of that uncertainty, it got wrapped up, signed to a good contract, and all of a sudden he's playing better this year.
Mike in Stowe, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving as I did. I just wanted to touch real quickly on the Stadnica situation. You know, pardon my phraseology here, but the kid coming up, as far as his development goes, to jump into a winning situation, I think will help him immensely playing around the guys that he's playing with, as opposed to, you've got a bunch of injuries and then you have to call a guy up to try to, create a spark or to fill in a big gap. But I think his development will be far greater because he's jumping into a winning situation, playing with guys that, like you've all said, have elevated their game. He's going to learn what it takes to win and fight through games, where they're down a couple of goals. I just think the future's bright for this kid, and I think developmentally the situation that he's been put into really couldn't be much better. Do you agree?
I mean, I know, Bob, you're a, and we've talked about this many times over the years, that you're a big proponent of giving guys time to marinate in the AHL and really kind of grow into their game. He started off great down in Providence. I don't think it's bad to to reward a guy like that and give him a little taste and maybe, look, I don't expect that he's going to be here the rest of the year, but you give him a look and show him this is what it takes to play at this level.
Yeah, no, it's not a bad thing at all. It only gets bad or difficult, I think, when it's a yo-yo, right? It's up, down, up, down, up, down. Just try to leave him alone and let him play. And I believe that is the plan down in Providence. I mean, injuries have been ridiculous here, and the amount of injuries have been ridiculous. So they've been forced to do a couple of different things, a guy like Solaric has been that guy, up, down a lot. And, I mean, has that affected him? I don't know. But he hasn't been the same when he's come up here to Boston to play, where other guys have come up and excelled when they've been up here. So, Frederick's been that guy a little bit late, over the last couple of years, up, down, mm-hmm. a lot of up, up and downs. And, get an opportunity, don't quite grab it enough, and, get sent back down. So, I like the example of Jake DeBrusk, where even though he was a really good player in Providence, by all accounts, there was a lot of nights he was the best player on the ice for Providence. And now you're Jake DeBrusk, and you're in your first pro year, you're playing in Providence, you're putting up numbers, you're playing well, and you're seeing other guys get called up. That's difficult for a person, right? And that's where the coach, and I had this conversation with Bruce Cassidy the other day in our interview with him, And I know it from firsthand. It's hard when you see players around you getting called up and you feel that you should be the guy getting called up. Mm-hmm. But they've got a long-term plan for you. They want, when you get called up,
they want it to be back. For good. Yeah.
So, and I'm not saying that Stadnica is going to be that yo-yo or he's not going back. I think the long-term plan for him is to be in Providence the majority of this year. It's not a bad thing to get a taste.
Sure.
Reward, taste, for whatever the reason is, and I think that, it's probably because of injuries right now. If everybody's healthy, he's probably not here right now. But it's not a bad thing, and it's a good culture in that locker room. It's a good culture on the ice. They're winning ways, and, the way that they do things, that it's always good to get that taste. But I think the danger is when it happens a lot during the season and you're going up and down. So the coaches down there, the challenge, who was the coach when, I think it was Kevin Dean, when DeBrusk was down there, I believe. So the challenge for Kevin Dean or whoever the coach was is to talk to him and say, look, you're going to get your chance. You got to be a little patient here, mm-hmm. but you're going to get your chance. And when you do, make sure you're not coming back here. And sometimes that's hard for a player to see the long-term plan. But, I think they do it the majority of time the right way with players and what they have in store for them moving forward.
Drafting and developing is just an essential. It's the lifeblood of your organization. Yeah. Because to be able to try and go out on the free agent market to solve your problems, very hard to do. And you're overpaying to do it because you're paying largely for past production. But the other thing, just because the conversation was brought up with respect to the environment that Jack Stadnica is in, if you're a general manager and you have a prize prospect or a guy that you really like, do you want to put him in a situation where your team's losing a ton or maybe have some questionable guys in your core? I think about a guy like Jack Eichel. When you wonder how his development was impacted because of the losing in Buffalo, because of the flux behind the bench, because of the players that he was surrounded by, what would Jack be like if obviously the situation was different? Let's say Jack was surrounded by a core like the Bruins.
Right.
What would he be like right now? So if you're a general manager, that's what you're thinking about, if you have a prized prospect and you want him to try and develop the right way.
When you talk about the importance of it, I mean, the cap structure in the league makes it, you know, absolutely important that you develop your own guys because they're cheaper in the early years than going out on the open market. Well, you can't stock your team that way.
And the reality is that the better the guys get, they're going to get paid, yep. And because of that, you're going to have to make hard choices.
The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you here in the Town Fair Tire Studios in our second hour of the day. And joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline right now, the Boston Bruins Foundation, is Bob Sweeney. Good morning, Bob.
How are we doing, guys?
Doing well. Everything's good. Team's on a 6-game winning streak. Nothing to complain about this morning. Everything's great.
Yeah, well, you better get your shovels out. I just got off the weather channel here. We're gonna get some snow. So
your outdoor rink up yet, Shrew?
No, that's all done. It's all done. I got most of my lights up though the last few days, but no one's home this year, Beersy, so the rink is gone.
You're old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wanted to have you on this morning because the foundation obviously always has a lot going on, but there's an opportunity here over the next couple weeks or so for people to get involved in a really special thing that I know a lot of people in this area are excited about, which is low number license plates. And the Bruins have the Bruins Foundation actually has some specialty plates available. Tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah, well, the plates have been in existence. We've actually were the first sports team to come out with them. And I think everybody remembers the commercial with Berge and Razor a few years ago, many years ago, actually.
Zamboni, right?
The Zamboni, yeah. That was Joe Kernan came up with that, and kudos to Joe, and it's been a great program for Mass Hockey. And we've had some plates that we've, had on the shelf, so to speak, and now we're going to slowly start releasing some of the lower plates. And anybody, in Massachusetts, you know, we have plate number 47, obviously Tory Krug's number that we're doing a raffle for, and then we have plate 28, 34, 36, 38, 51, 54, 64, 84. So, Beersy, you could probably, you know, look at plate number 34. That might look good on you.
One of my many numbers.
Yeah. So, yeah, fans interested can just go to bostonbruins.com/license plates for more information. But great opportunity. Everybody likes low number plates. And so more to come.
So just to kind of clarify, so some of those numbers that you – or most of those numbers that you said are up for auction, but then, you know, the number 47 license plate is actually going to be raffled off.
That's right. Yeah. So for as little as $10, you can buy a chance to get plate number 47. So you know you don't have to. Anybody's basically eligible for that, and anybody else that wants to, you know, bid on the other plates, they can do that. So
very cool. A great opportunity, and again. The money goes to a great spot too, right? I mean, that's what always you have these events. We have you on every so often to talk about these events and fundraisers and things like that. And this is this is money that always goes to the right spot, which is the most important.
Yeah, Mass Hockey has different programs, whether it's sled hockey or kids that can't afford to play the game, and it helps out all these different programs. So, you know, anybody can play the great sport of hockey.
Swoop, in addition to that, I know because the Bruins are in the midst of their longest homestand of the year, 5 games. What are some of the 50-50s that are going to be coming up?
Well, we just had Martin Richards Foundation yesterday, so that was good. Tomorrow's is Garden Neighborhood Charities, which you know, supports the great initiative that Feed the Homeless that we did on Tuesday before Thanksgiving. So we do have a big stretch here. So yeah, it's, you know, they come one after another every other day, as you guys well know. So yeah, we're looking forward to it. And, you know, all these charities, it's a great way for them to spread their word and their mission to all of our fans at our games.
We want people to remember, too, coming up, because you guys just recently announced this year's Pucks and Paddles, which is coming up on January the 17th. It's a Friday afternoon. It's going to be should be a great time. This has turned into a terrific event that you guys and the Sports Hub have kind of teamed up to put on over the past few years.
Yeah, that's, I think, you know, the guys, most of the guys, they play a little ping pong maybe in the locker room, and some of our guys are quite good at it, but it's a great way to interact with our players, and the proceeds will benefit the Bruins Foundation and Tufts Floating Hospital. So that the good news is for that, I guess one session is already sold out as of yesterday, and we still have the other session with players like Marshy, Z, so it's always a good way to get an up close and personal with our players, and obviously the money raised goes to the Tufts Floating Hospital and to the Bruins Foundation.
I would imagine the guys, you know, who have been around here a while, probably, you know, happy to not have to shave the heads anymore.
Yeah, I think so. That kind of ran its course. I remember years ago when I was in college, that was probably one of the traditions. We knew when we were going to go to BC, we were getting our head shaved. And I think, you know, guys had weddings and whatnot. So this turns into, I think, a great way to still have our guys involved. And, you know, it's the same beneficiary. So as long as, you know, everybody enjoys themselves and we raise money, it's a win-win.
Bob Sweeney, we appreciate the time as always, and again want to invite people to get involved in that license plate auction, those Bruins low number license plates and the license plate raffle. Go to the Bruins Community Foundation website and get all the information on that and enter, and it's a great opportunity. And again, you guys do such a great job. Thanks so much for all that you do to help raise money for so many charities around the area.
Thank you, guys. Enjoy the rest of the day today, because we'll be busy all next week. Get those lights up, Beersy.
You got it, Swoop. We'll see you.
Right. Thanks, Bob.
See you, Swoop.
Miss something?
This is a black and gold freight train.
Catch the Hockey Show podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com and the Sports Hub app.
The Sports Hub, the Sports Hub Hockey Show. 617-779-0985 is the number, of course. We get back to your calls here with Eddie up next. Hey, Eddie.
Hi, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the David Backes contract. Is there any relief there? I mean, if they buy him out, how does it work against the cap hit? And do you think there's any relief there as far as going forward trying to sign Krug and these other guys? I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
All right, appreciate it. I mean, we've talked about a number of different, you know, kind of scenarios of guys that have contracts coming up and whatnot in relation to the signing of Coyle. I mean, Backes is obviously the one that, you know, that comes to mind first. The details of how exactly it works and if it would be something that they would explore. I mean, I don't know how much we want to delve into that, but essentially, you know, you get to spread out the remainder of the contract over multiple years going forward. You still have to eat the cap hit, but just not all at once is how I understand it.
Yeah, but I don't know the entire numbers. I know some people have done it, that it's not as big a relief as you think.
So based on cap friendly, it would be a $2 million cap hit savings next year, and then there would be a $1 million cap hit in the year after that. So you'd still have $4 million on the cap as opposed to the $6 that you would have if he's on the team next year. That would be the difference. So it's only
a total savings of $1 million, right?
They have the buyout cap hit for next year at $4 million. He would be currently his hit would be $6 right now, right?
No, the cap is $6, but his salary is not.
Okay,
but the cap hit wouldn't get as much relief, I don't think.
All right, so
I don't even want to get into it.
Anyway,
I really don't.
Yeah,
I know people a lot smarter than me have looked at it. Anyway, it's not a huge savings.
That's the main point, is that whether it's, you know, $1 million, $2 million, it's like, is that going to be the difference between keeping Torrey Krug and not?
No.
Likely not, right? I mean, there are if $1 million in savings is all you need, there are ways to save $1 million without cutting a guy loose that you don't need to.
Well, just take the Torrey Krug contract aside. I think for most teams that are at or near the cap, because it's computed every single day, so every dollar will matter, both in season and looking beyond.
Right. I think we talked about that a week or two ago, about how, you know, they've taken a guy in paper transaction, sent him down to Providence for a day because they're just trying to save that little bit of extra cap space for later on in the year, when the expectation is that they'll be looking to add a valuable player to this roster closer to the trade deadline, right? And this is one of those years where you're probably going to wait until the very last minute to try to make that deal, as opposed to getting it done before the deadline, because you need every day that ticks by is a little bit less that you're going to be accountable for. Let's go to Dave in Brockton up next. Hey, Dave.
Morning, boys. How are you doing this morning?
Good.
All right, I'm hopefully not going to bring down the morale this morning with my stupid question, if this is one. Obviously, everybody knows the situation in Calgary with Bill Peters and what he said, that it's not tolerable in the NHL. Is there any possibility that the Department of Player Safety could take a page out of their book with the severities of penalties and suspensions of the people that are getting away with some of the dirty hits that have already happened this year? Like, I mean, I know what the guy said, and he lost his job because of it, but did anybody see that cross-check by Oscar Sundquist on Victor Arvidsson last week, or the week been a week and a half ago?
That was Robert Bortuzzo.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Robert Bortuzzo. And he only got 4 games, and Arvidsson's gone 4 to 6 weeks. That's disgusting. Like, I'm 42, been watching hockey for over 25 years. That's unacceptable, and the fact that Stefan Quenneville, as dirty as a player as I ever remembered him playing, why are the severities of these penalties not more severe for these players to put a note across that you can't do this? It's not acceptable.
I appreciate the call. I mean, well, two very different situations, so let's separate those.
George Parros.
It's George Parros now. Stefan Quenneville is not in charge anymore, but it's George Parros. And I had this discussion with a couple people this week, and we did, I think, Judd, The cross check by Kerfoot was pretty dangerous. A guy going back for a puck, Eric Johnson from Colorado, going back for a puck, and Kerfoot kind of cross checked him. And when you're going back at that speed for a puck, and you got all of a sudden your back takes a blow, and even though it's not like a vicious cross checking motion, but to put a cross checking motion on a guy like that when he's going back at that speed, doesn't take much to put him out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnson went into the boards hard. And I don't know if he's back in the lineup yet. Kerfoot only got 2 games. I know he's not a repeat offender or anything, but he got 2 games. But then I saw the guy from Washington.
Garnet Hathaway.
He spits at Branson.
Yeah.
He got 3 games. So I don't know. I mean, he should get something, don't get me wrong. But I'm saying Kerfoot probably deserved a little bit more than what he got based on an injury. I mean, spitting's a pretty,
that's a pretty vile thing.
But that cross check is, I mean, that's career threatening. When you're going back at that speed for a puck, and you get all of a sudden, you get a guy stick on your back, and you lose your balance going in there. I mean, think about you know, when Roman Polak went and he tried to hit Wagner, Wagner was going at pretty decent speed into the corner there. Fortunately for Wagner, he didn't lose his balance. He actually spun out of it. But Polak was going in a little reckless because he had the stick on his back. And when Wagner spun out of it, that's where Polak lost his balance and went into the boards hard. So, you know, you don't want to see anybody get hurt, but you also have to have an idea when you're going into the corner where the guy at speed, you know, where your stick is going in there. And Kerfoot, I thought, was reckless, and I thought he deserved more than two based on that.
I mean, basically,
I know he's not a repeat offender or anything, but yeah. I you know, he was apologetic, but, well, that's after the fact. It doesn't mean anything.
I mean, at least, I guess you could make the case if you're looking to play, you know, devil's advocate, you could make the case and say, well, that's in the run of play. It's, you know, kind of a, you know, they're playing for the puck, right? They're trying to make
points. Kerfoot's not making any play on the puck.
Okay.
Johnson's going to get there first, and Kerfoot cross-checks them as they're going back full speed.
I was going to compare that
to... You're making a play on the puck. You're going in with one hand on your stick trying to get to the puck.
Right.
I was going to
compare and contrast that to the Bortuzzo, where the guy's, you know, laying on the ice and you give him one from above.
And Bortuzzo, they showed, I saw the video of that. He's been suspended three times, I think, for it.
Mm.
That's his third time. So he's a repeat offender, and the same thing with the cross checks. So, you know, can you make a case for more because of Arvidsson's injury? That's been the argument for years. If a guy's going to miss, you know,
you take a guy out for a month
with a concussion, I mean, how does this guy only get two games? But I don't think that argument's ever going to come, or that it's ever going to get solved.
Yeah, I think you could make the case. It's like, okay, if it's deliberate or it's not, I mean, there's a lot of things that kind of enter into this. Like if you hit a guy and it, you know, he gets a concussion and he's out for 3 months, like, should you have to sit for 3 months? Well, you know, if you didn't mean it, like if you didn't go in there elbow high, you know, it just kind of happens. Stuff happens during the course of a game. But when a guy, I think the NHL has over the years, when it's deliberate stick stuff, when you're, you know, if you're swinging a stick at a guy, if you're, you know, using your stick, they'll come down on you harder with that oftentimes than they will on anything else. And I think that's why, you know, Bortuzzo gets four and, you know, and Kerfoot gets two because they look at it as being different. You know, the one maybe a little bit more part of the game than the other.
It's a black and gold freight train.
All things Bruins and the NHL. It's the Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you here until 11 o'clock. And joining us now, as he does each week at this time, on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline is Nesson's Billy Jaffe. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning, RJ. Beersy Judd. How you guys doing? Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Morning. Morning.
You too. Bob Thank Sweeney you. Wants you and everybody else to have their shovels ready.
Oh, dude, I know. I heard some of that, and I heard are we getting that much snow? Have they changed the forecast? Like, all of a sudden, I got to go fill up the snowblower, I feel like.
Depends on who you ask at this point. I'm hearing there might be some rain involved now and all kinds of fun stuff. So
nice. Love it. Okay, great. Awesome.
All right. Well, before we get into some of the stuff around the league yesterday, we had an issue came up early in the show today that we wanted to ask you about, which was the review of the double minor high stick yesterday.
Oh, I love review. Yeah. Awesome.
I know you do. Yeah. So what in your view happened there? Because, you know, the guys were saying it didn't seem like they had called a penalty at all. And then, you know, they looked at a video and suddenly there was a 4-minute penalty.
Okay. Don't yell at me. All right. I'm a caveat to both Judd and Beardy right now. I'm to tell you what I've been told, that the call on the ice was made that it was a double minor high stick, that one of the officials made an announcement that was overtaken by the Garden music. That announcement was made, and then the only part that came out was that under review. But the original call was a double minor high stick. I do know this. Both officials got together. The low referee was Chris Rooney. The back referee was Wes McCauley. They discussed it. They said they had Lindholm on a high stick, double, you know, and then there was an immediate, obvious injury to the player, Smith, I believe in the eye area, not in the eye, thankfully, but around the eye, and that there was going to be a double minor. And then they both all agreed, all of them, to review it. Again, the review announcement was not complete because of the music that took it over. They then go to review. They both agree that that was still a double minor on Lindholm, even though the player, was it Nieves, I believe, Bu Nieves,
yep,
had a little bit of, there was a stick battle there. But in the eyes of the officials, fellas, the stick battle was what they considered a hockey play, more so than a violent or a reckless lifting of the stick to catapult the stick up and be the cause of the injury and be the cause of the double minor. Now, let's forget, if there was no cut, and I'm sure you guys already discussed this, if there was no blood, overt injury, that this would have just been a minor penalty and not reviewable. But because it was a double minor review, it becomes reviewable. So, in their eyes, the officials see it as a hockey play, per se, with regard to the battle, and the fact that Lindholm's stick was already off the ice when that hockey battle began, they felt, that this, and by the way, I think they're always more or less going to side with the injured player, you know, on this type of play too. This is my take, but that's what it. I've investigated into it. That's what I have been told, and there, because at first when I looked at the play, I was not doing the game, RJ. I was watching the game there as a fan. I saw, and I'm like, wait a second, there was some impact, some lift of. The officials didn't see it completely that way. They felt it being a regular hockey play. It wasn't a follow-through by Nieves. It wasn't a violent or reckless lift by Nieves. That they felt that Lindholm, it still has to be in control of the stick. But again, I go back to this. Because there was blood, that's the only reason it was reviewable being a double minor. If they had just said, hey, we got a high stick, and it was on Lindholm, and it was a minor, that wouldn't even be reviewable. They just would have given him 2 minutes.
Well, I never saw them announce it or heard them announce it. So if it was drowned out, then I guess it was drowned out. But the bench felt the same way, that they were not told that it was a double minor. Because I can tell you this, it was not called immediately. If they made the call, it was called after they all got together and talked about it.
So, I would agree. And that's where
there's no arm up by either guy.
I think that they came together. I can't tell you at all. At all, from my vantage point, if one of the officials announced it, right, and they had it drop. Now, you can go. I could probably go back and see. I don't know about if the broadcast caught it or not. I did hear the play is under review now. I did hear that. That I heard, the double minor high sticking under review. Was there an original call made, meaning was that part drowned out? Maybe, I don't know if NBC caught the official, I believe it would have been Rooney, making the call like that. Did they get him visually? I don't know, Bob. I don't know, and I guess I'll go back and look at it. But that is what I've, after some investigation, I have been told, that the original call when they got together was, yes, double minor high sticking, and that they would go to review on it to make sure that it was an opponent stick and not one of their own, meaning one of the Rangers sticks that hit him.
There was also a bit of controversy yesterday about Brad Marchand getting pulled off the ice in the third period after taking a shot to the head in the second period.
Yep, there should be.
Yeah, I mean, he was ticked off after the game, and he apologized after, you know, a couple hours later on social media. But that was an odd situation to see a guy get taken off the ice that long after it had happened.
I would agree, and I can't find any reason why. I can't get any reason why. It wasn't like there were any other games going on. You know, sometimes, and you guys know this well, back in Toronto in the situation room, there's literally 9 games going on at once. So they've got 9 people watching, not just for spotters, but for rule stuff and everything. And so there might be a little bit of a, when I say a backup, it might take a couple of minutes to figure something out with all these games going and they want to get the right call made. With regard to this, we were doing 18-minute intermissions yesterday, right? 18 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so from the time that Brad was hit to the time that he was pulled off, about, I don't have an exact time, 24, 25 minutes, maybe even 26 minutes? Like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? It took that long. I can't get a good explanation as to why that happened, RJ. It doesn't make sense. That is supposed to be immediate. And when I mean immediate, I'm talking within a minute. You often see when the guy gets hit and there's any type of a consternation about the way he handles himself, the way he looks, etc. The trainer is supposed to be radioed immediately within a minute and taken off. So I quite honestly, I don't blame Brad for being pissed off in that moment. And I'm guessing that he obviously calmed down. Maybe he had a glass of Pinot or Cab, and it helped settle him down a little bit later, and he made the apology. But I don't blame him at all. I don't. I mean, that was foolish, I thought, of the league.
Well, especially in the situation it was in. It's like if you're, you know, look, if it's immediate after the play, you take him in there and you put him in the quiet room, I think that's a good thing, right? That's what they should do. If you do it, you know, as you said, 25 minutes after the fact, then what's the point?
I mean, no point. Right. I have no answer. I've checked. I've tried. I can't seem to get a good answer. So, no point.
All right. The biggest story in the league this week was the ultimate resignation, as it turned out, of Bill Peters. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on the situation as a whole? How Calgary handled it? How they, it took a few days. They removed him from the team, but it took a few days to get to the ultimate dismissal. So just kind of your overall thoughts on the whole situation.
Well, I think it was awful. I don't think there's no excuse for what Bill Peters did. I don't care if it was 10 minutes or 10 years ago. I don't personally understand the word choice and word usage. My take, my belief, I've never think of using those words. But he obviously at that time felt it was fine and used it. There were some people, I have been in some conversations, they talk about how that was old school coaching. I'm like, that's garbage. That's asinine. And I don't think that there's any time or place at all. Now, the team stood up supposedly for Akeem Alou is the player's name that was playing for Rockford about a decade ago, who was the target of the attack, or the comments, I should say. And they stood up for him, and that's heartening, and that's great. But you know, Bill Peters, now the former coach of Calgary, it just doesn't make sense to me. I've never had a coach walk into a room and use that word, those words in that way. How did Calgary handle it? I'm actually okay with the way that they handled it. I think they got up, they tried to get, when I say in front of it, meaning they said, all right, we know we have a situation. They went into crisis mode right away. Brad Treliving, who is their general manager, contacted Akeem Alou that night, started working the phones with other people immediately. They obviously put their coach on, I guess what you would call a temporary hiatus, a leave of absence. I read that he took a charter flight home that night. They were in Buffalo. And on the next either morning or something, left and went back to Calgary to be separate from the team. They continue to do their due diligence. I thought Brad Treliving was very open and honest when he said, we need to get all the facts. I need to do more work. I'm sorry if this is not fast enough for some people, but this is too serious of a matter. And I don't see how anybody could disagree with that. That doesn't mean that they didn't think what happened was wrong, but they needed to confirm. They needed to make sure that there was corroboration. They need to make sure that everything was right, because this is such a serious instance, such a serious matter. And then there's obviously other things that came out from the Carolina organization, where Rod Brind'Amour immediately corroborated a story that had happened about a player being contacted, hit on the bench and kicked on the bench and punched. And Rod Brind'Amour said the incidents in question definitely happened. And so you start getting all this material, more stuff that comes out, and then eventually Bill Peters hands in his resignation after he also penned an apology letter addressed to Brad Treliving. I wasn't there. I think the word choices that were used by Bill were okay. Yeah. Not even okay. I thought they were kind of like general, generic. He said he was sorry. I believe that. He said his word choices wasn't meant to hurt anybody. I don't understand that. I don't agree with that. Again, my take on it. So overall, a a real, I use the term interesting, and I don't mean that in a good way, a real weird, at times uncomfortable, maybe a week that will change the NHL in coaching and everything, and maybe people's behavior forever.
Well, that's kind of what I wanted to ask you and the group here is that, look, Mike Babcock got fired, and that's kind of what seemed to precipitate all this is players started talking about his coaching style and yep. and whatnot, and it kind of morphed into this thing that brings down Bill Peters. And look, what he did in the minor leagues is indefensible, but the point about Carolina, as you said, you know, getting physical with his players on the bench, I think that surprises some people too who haven't been around the game. And
I'd agree.
I mean, clearly that's not something that anybody would look at as acceptable, or I don't think that most people would look at as acceptable now, but I don't.
It's happened before.
And people haven't been fired for it before. I mean, it's, this is.
Well, he wasn't fired for that. Right. And exactly. And I don't think coaches are going to get, I mean, maybe now, and I mean coaches, I'm talking National Hockey League. I'm not talking, please, nobody's youth or high school or anything like that. But I'm talking about, I've heard stories of other coaches regularly making contact with players and over the years. I'm going back a long time. And but he didn't get fired for that. That was handled immediately there. Players did corroborate that, too. It just seems to be the more and more coming out about this person. And what he got fired for was what happened with when he was part of the Chicago Blackhawks, Rockford IceHogs organization.
Putting aside all of the egregious stuff, how much do you guys think that the way that coaches approach players has both had to change and will obviously continue to need to change as you're dealing with younger guys who have come up being raised very differently than players of 10, 15, 20 years ago?
I think it changes significantly. I mean, Beersey played in the league, and maybe he saw differences from when he started to when he ended in that time. I know that I've talked to coaches over the years about, and the common theme or common comment is, you used to be able to talk to players. Now you have to talk with them, so to speak. And, there's a whole different mentality, a whole different perception, a whole different reality, I guess. I think coaches have changed absolutely. We're seeing a difference, a stark contrast in Toronto right now from Sheldon Keefe to Mike Babcock, right, guys? I mean, you're seeing, different little things, not so subtle either. The way that he talks to the players, the way that he treats practices, the way that he allows certain things to go on. It's a different mindset.
I think it's been changing for years. I think a lot of coaches have talked about the fact, and Billy sort of referenced this, that it's a new generation of players, and they need a different type of communication. You're motivating using different tactics. That's what essentially came up in the Mitch Marner story along with Mike Babcock. But I think that this has been going on here for a while. But what Bill Peters acknowledged doing is completely unacceptable. And that has nothing to do with the generation that we're playing in. That was unacceptable in any generation.
Yep.
So is the day of the hard ass coach, and who's just going to ride guys into the, into the ice. Is that done?
I think in certain ways, but that doesn't mean you can't be a hard ass. Doesn't mean that. No, I mean, you can be, but I think you have to explain why you're being a hard ass, or at least show a little different side. But I mean, riding guys is one thing. Riding guys is, I mean, look, that's still acceptable. There's still coaches that get the most out of players. There's different tactics to coaching. And if you're not, isn't this a comment you always hear with guys when they get their first job at the ultimate level, right? At the pro ranks they always ask, they're always asked by media, who is your idol or who is your coaching guy that you really looked up to or whatever, and what did you learn the most? And then he says, well, the comment always is just to be yourself. So if you're a tougher guy, be yourself. This doesn't mean you need, tough's one thing, nasty or inappropriate something else, as far as I'm concerned.
All right, Billy, we appreciate the time as always, and we'll look forward to talking to you again.
All right, gentlemen, have a good week.
There is Billy Jaffe of Nesson joining us, of course, on the Volkswagen Dealers expert hotline. All right, guys, a Saturday night off. It doesn't happen that often, so hopefully you get a chance. Got an afternoon game out of the way last. Had Friday night free. Do you have Saturday night free?
We didn't even get a chance to talk about the Habs. Oh, Giuliani, sick of losing.
I mean, I said it earlier this morning. If you could just put that eight goal game on a loop and play that for the rest of my life, I would sit there and happily watch it. That was some fun times watching the Bell Center, watching Carey Price depart. Oh, great stuff.
Imagine a place where you are never far from your next adventure. Welcome to Prince Edward Island, Canada, a destination where the breathtaking views rejuvenate the soul. Discover 700 miles of coastline with white sand beaches and red cliffs, the freshest flavors from land and sea, world-class golf, outdoor adventures, and authentic cultural experiences. Come find your island, Prince Edward Island, the official travel destination of the NHL and a proud partner of the Boston Bruins. Learn more at explorepei.com.